Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. Well, let's start the new year out right by talking to Chris Harris, because it's fun, because it's easy, and because it's always insightful and enjoyable. He is a professor in the Department of Electronic Media Communication, an experienced professional photographer with many, many credits to his credit, but we're going to talk about something that doesn't involve specifically photography today. We're going to talk about the WikiLeaks scandal and the dissemination of cables from the U.S. State Department through WikiLeaks and into the mainstream media to the embarrassment of some people in the diplomatic community. And it has caused much discussion and debate over national security versus free press. And Chris Harris, thank you for being here with us today. And we'll just jump right in by saying, when you first found out about when the story first broke in the New York Times and other mainstream media entities, what was your initial reaction when you read the story?
Well, first of all, Jenna, thank you so much for allowing me to come back. after some shows, I could understand why you might reconsider that.
No.
Well, you know, one of the big things about when the WikiLeaks story was first broken was that it was supposed to be this horrendous leak of very pertinent information that could deal with the security of the United States. And that was sort of brought forth by the government real quick, but it never panned out. The WikiLeaks has been nothing but a huge embarrassment to governments around the world about how governments work. But when you look at the actual information that was leaked, first of all, it was vetted by WikiLeaks before they released it. They vetted it to make sure that it, according to them, that it did not have that kind of sensitive material in it. But second of all, what comes on is so this big, huge, flaming ball of gas comes into the scene. This is going to just destroy the U.S. government. We're letting out all these secrets that will give all of our enemies improper information that they shouldn't have. Well, when you took a look at it, it was leaked by a specialist first class. They don't have very high clearances usually, so it was a secret clearance, which actually is a very low-level classification. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, WikiLeaks from the start said that one of the reasons why they were leaking information was to show how poorly the classified system works in the U.S. government. And that is, I'm not talking about classified ads, I'm talking about classifications that an utterance will all of a sudden be top secret. Or it'll be eyes only.
What justifies being secret as opposed to top secret, as opposed to confidential, these various levels of security?
Right. Well, there's different things about security, and it brings up another question in my mind. First of all, the security that we always talk about is the loss of security for the United States, that we're leaking top-level secrets. No, these aren't atom bomb plans. No, these aren't the newest plans for the newest wing-type airplane or anything like that. What these were back-of-the-scene cables from the State Department. Cables from the State Department are based on things that in the real world might be page 6 on the New York Post. It is gossip. Here we're paying ambassadors and all these staffs, and they go to parties, and they gossip about Sarkozy of France. They gossip about Berlusconi. Well, to the shock and awe of the WikiLeaks, it's just gossip.
I mean, this is like stuff like Angela Merkel's, the president of Germany, Angela Merkel's management style, for example, if somebody said something disparaging about that. Or, you know, Silvio Berlusconi screws around. Well, we already knew that.
Duh,
the president of Italy. Or the most titillating one was that Muammar Gaddafi travels with a voluptuous Ukrainian blonde nurse. He actually has several of them, but there's one that he likes better than the others.
Well, let me tell you, the National National Enquirer will pay $50,000, I'm sure, for the first picture that has a good old Muammar Gaddafi with his
voluptuous Ukrainian
voluptuous
nurse.
Ukrainian nurse. Yes, and that's the kind of stuff that comes out. And it also, it does show, I think, what Julian Assange was really talking about, and that is the idea that there's no reason for any of this stuff to be labeled top secret. Some of the information that is being labeled secret, and not even top secret, excuse me, but just secret, are things that we should know about, quite frankly. There are things that show how decisions are made and how poorly some decisions are made. So I think the overwhelming response to WikiLeaks is that it was a flash in the pan. It certainly got the United States very, very upset, and they had to go and make all sorts of phone calls apologizing to other governments about rumors that they spread. It's nothing more to me. It's not high-level government. It's about second grade.
And how do we know that the other governments are not doing the same thing about United States diplomats within their own equivalent of the State Departments and
their
cabinet?
Not only do we know that it is occurring all the time, but it's with some of our greatest allies. Israel is one of the largest producers of spies against the United States of anyone anywhere in the world.
So if a cable pops up that says Benjamin Netanyahu thinks Barack Obama is stupid or something like that, which we shouldn't be surprised because other leaders form opinions too.
There you go. So this is not just a United States problem. It's a problem everywhere. And that is that most governments would want to hide most of what they produce. They will not let the information out. Now, just a few seconds ago, I commented about problems with the WikiLeaks situation. One of the problems is the retaliation of the United States government. I'm not talking about, although I do want to talk about the retaliation against Julian Assange, mainly because they certainly have gone out of their way to retaliate against him, and as we know, the WikiLeaks group has retaliated by then going and doing denial of service attacks on major sites, including MasterCard and Visa and some other spots like that.
But he has sex charges pending against him in Sweden. Actually, what they have said is that they just want to talk to him. I don't think it's actually a leveling of charges. But
that's why he got off on the bond, on the bail.
After filmmaker Michael Moore helped pitch in a few thousand dollars of his own money.
Right, exactly. But one of the one of the things that his attorneys very quickly pointed out was there was no reason to hold him in jail because they just wanted to talk to him. They didn't want him to be arrested. The Swedish government did not want him to be arrested. They want to talk to him.
This is so confusing to Americans because in this country, you're not supposed to be able to hold a person unless they are formally charged with a crime.
That's right, except under the Bush government.
But that's another issue.
That's another issue. But I think one of the things that we really need to pay attention to is what kind of response came about and why would it be such a personal, hard-edged response against this group, especially when it's shown that what they released wasn't that important. So it must be the idea that they are releasing information. And so now the U.S. government in the Air Force, it has blocked Air Force computers from getting to the New York Times website, to several other newspapers' websites. They will not allow U.S. airmen to get to the site for the New York Times.
And that is a First Amendment issue.
You would think.
Yeah.
They've totally blocked it off. And by the way, the biggest thing that they've done since the WikiLeaks thing is that they've made a total declaration that no flash drives can be used in the Pentagon.
For anything?
That's correct. Now, first of all, that causes a real problem. Second of all, what they're saying is that here are the people that want to basically strip search regular people going onto an airplane, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they can't control their enlisted personnel that are assigned to top secret areas, and no one stops and says, well, you can't leave with that CD? that has all the information?
What this says is that you need a better system of classification internally. This, never mind, we'll put WikiLeaks and the fact that they can get access to it aside for a moment as a different issue. What about the issue of what our government chooses to make secret and what it doesn't choose to make secret? Isn't that at the heart of the matter?
I think that is the philosophical approach that Julian Assange was taking.
What do we know about this man? I mean, what is his agenda? What is his motivation? Is he a journalist?
That rears a big question that's been going off. And the reason why it's concerned about whether or not he's a journalist or not, because if you are a journalist, there is some ethical leeway that would allow you to release these documents.
Right.
But is he a journalist? I don't know that he's ever written anything. I don't know that he's ever reported anything.
This is the quintessential question of the internet age, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you have to be in the mainstream media to be considered a journalist? Is any Joe who starts a blog in his mother's basement a journalist by definition?
Well, and I'm sure this comes up in court cases all the time, because there are certain protections for journalists that allow them to do things on a, like you say, a blog or something on this order that would protect them, that would not adhere to a normal person. Being a journalist does give you some rights, some different kinds of categories of things. And what I mean by that is that if you put out a story that is filled with falsehoods, you can suffer the consequences legally. Certainly everything from libel to all sorts of different charges could be levied against you. But if you have truth as your defense and that you can prove the truth of what you say, no one in their right mind is going to sue you.
Mm-hmm.
That is different from the regular human being, just normal, everyday Joe. I don't think that Julian Assange thinks of himself necessarily as a journalist, but I think that there are legal protections and ethical protections as to why he wants to think of himself as a journalist. After all, I don't know of any court rulings. I teach ethics and law also in mass communications. And I don't know of a single court ruling. I could definitely be wrong on this, and I would love for any of your listeners to call you and give you any corrected information. But I don't know of a single court case that has come up concerning any of the information in WikiLeaks. And you know, what that means is there's things that you can't say that are wrong, because other people will say, no, that really did occur.
Yeah.
You know? So it is an odd problem whether you are a journalist or not that will afford you certain protections.
As a practical matter, if anybody can hack into anything anymore, how does Julian Assange and WikiLeaks protect itself?
Well, now that's a real technical thing going on, and that's the whole idea of the internet was developed initially, ARPANET was what it was called. Initially, it was developed under the pretense that you can't cut the head off of the snake. In other words, you can't kill the rest of the snake by cutting off the head. So there's no way that you can close down the internet. There's always going to be individual nodules, which is what we all are basically on the internet. So you can always get the information out. This is the explosion from the Pentagon Papers, when it was used with three or four papers that were leaked that information. Therefore, the government went after the New York Times, so the Boston Globe said, well, we'll publish them. They go after the Boston Globe, and Chicago Tribune says, well, we'll publish them. All it takes is publishing them, and it's a moot point at that instance.
Except with the internet, now it happens like that.
And anybody can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's true, false, who's to say somebody won't come out with a whole set of WikiLeaks 2 that is based on nothing but falsehoods?
Mm-hmm.
And so wouldn't that screw up governments around the world, because they don't know what's true, what's false? If it's out there, people are going to respond to it. So if you've got your constituency responding to some charge on the internet from somebody from another country, this is a huge, gigantic leap from when the press really took a firm stance with the Pentagon Papers against the United States.
Now that you've mentioned the Pentagon Papers, it has been brought up in cable news channel chat show discussions and Sunday morning shows and things of that ilk. Is it an analogous situation, the WikiLeaks case and the Pentagon Papers case? Are there compare and contrast, Professor, if you would?
Well, there are similarities and there are certainly big differences. Let me talk about a big difference right from the start. WikiLeaks doesn't have any great blockbuster information. Pentagon Papers was filled with blockbuster information about how the U.S. government had lied to its citizens about the war in Vietnam, lying about everything from the number of Viet Cong who were killed. They had this 5 o'clock briefing every day.
Called the 5 o'clock follies.
Right. And they'd come on in and it's they, meaning the U.S. government, usually an army colonel or somebody, would come on in and say, well, we killed 1,500 North Vietnamese regulars today. And after about a couple of 3 years, somebody added up all the figures and it totaled out to be more than the entire population of Vietnam. So we knew that that was a lie, that it was false, that this is what was happening every day at 5 o'clock.
The Pentagon Papers was not backstage gossip.
No.
It was substantive stuff.
The Pentagon Papers was a situation paper explaining how we'd gotten into the war and how it was proceeding. And certainly by the early 70s, they knew that it wasn't going to proceed. Mid-60s, they knew it was not going to proceed well. But they went ahead with the war, which meant that we ended up with, 55,000
fatalities.
American fatalities. And hundreds of thousands of injured and wounded, whether they were native countrymen or soldiers. Mm-hmm. The big difference is what I'm trying to get at is that the Pentagon Papers had guts to it. WikiLeaks has gossip to it.
Mm-hmm. Is the break-in at Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist office, Daniel Ellsberg being the guy who leaked the Pentagon Papers, is the break-in at his psychiatrist office analogous to the sex charges pending in Sweden against Julian Assange?
Well, I think so in certain ways. Now, obviously, and by the way, it was some of the Watergate burglars who broke into the psychiatrist's office and stole Daniel Ellsberg's personal files with his psychiatrist. Now, first of all, you have to understand the import of this. There has never been a ruling that would uphold, a court ruling, that would uphold breaking in and stealing someone's private medical files in any situation. None.
Right.
That is one of the most private things that is safeguarded for every U.S. citizen.
Doctor-patient privilege is protected under U.S. law with a few minor exceptions, such as if someone's life is in immediate peril, mm-hmm. or something like that. It's not just a societal convention. It is in law.
And by the way, it was not done haphazardly. It was the Watergate plumbers who were employed, who were CIA agents at the time, therefore government employees, who were told to go break in for the president of the United States at the time, Richard Nixon, because they wanted to retaliate. There was no other reason to break into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office. It wasn't to stop pre-publication. It had already been published.
Mm-hmm.
The Pentagon Papers had come out.
That was total retaliation.
It was total retaliation, trying to point out that, he was a sicko. So you can't believe what he says. All of that kind of situation. Well, they're doing the same thing with Julian Assange right now. It is a third level, if you can put rape in quotes, you would need to, rape charges in Sweden. Basically, from what we can gather from listening to a lot of different sources, somehow it has something to do with a broken condom. And this is now being used. I heard him on a press conference last night say that now a tenth of all websites refer to him as being a rapist. Now, he said that there's 330 million websites out there. He said he did a check, and he just typed in a Google search.
Okay.
And typed in Julian Assange, rape, and he found out that 10% of all of the websites known to man at this time had referred to him as being Julian Assange, the rapist.
Despite the fact that he's not faced formal charges, let alone been tried.
Right.
And convicted.
Don't forget that one of the reasons why the Vietnam War ended was because the American people saw that what was supposed to be fought of in the name of freedom and democracy was not. We had photographs that showed that. Eddie Adams, a great picture of Colonel Lawan executing a suspected Viet Cong terrorist. Well, excuse me, but the idea of a democracy is that you have trials to decide that. So we should not become the executioners in this kind of situation, nor our allies.
What do you think is going to happen to that specialist first class? I mean, I don't need to compare this to Abu Ghraib, which is far more heinous in you know, people were mistreated and so forth. But in the investigation that followed that in the aftermath, the grunts got punished, but the higher-ups didn't.
Well,
is this young man going to become
Colonel
a scapegoat?
Look at Colonel Talley with
Mi Lai. Yeah.
You know, they took the lowest-level officer that they could find and charged him. He wasn't out there killing and murdering the people of Mi Lai without somebody having told him to go do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is what happens. This is the constant case. Now, this poor guy, I think his name is
Bradford?
Yeah, something in that order. This poor guy is just going to be a sacrificial lamb. He will be nothing but a little punctuation mark in history. Hopefully, he will gain the philosophical feeling that he did right. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that he had to do that. This was not, after all, again, take a look at the information. If he could lift, gosh, what was it, 230,000 documents?
I mean, they're still coming out in dribs and drabs. They haven't all been exposed yet.
But this is just a little specialist, first class. Obviously, things that are of a higher nature are classified in a higher nature.
Right.
These things aren't being distributed. They're smart enough to understand. Listen, Assange is no different than any other human being. He does not want to be charged with treason. If he wanted to be charged with treason, he could have handpicked certain facts out of the WikiLeaks documents that he was going to release and either falsify them or build them up differently or only release certain excerpts so it sounded as though it was something else was occurring rather than what ended up occurring. So he did not go anywhere out of the norm other than being a vehicle. Now, this brings up another situation. You know, under federal law, websites themselves are not responsible for what's contained in those websites.
Because people from the outside can post, people who are not the webmasters, in many cases, can post things.
And also content under New York Times versus Sullivan. You don't have to worry about the content. Because MSNBC has a website and they report news, If they report news that is erroneous, it may be news that they got from Reuters or AP.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not up to them, by law, by court decision, it's not up to them to be responsible for the content of their site.
Now, NBC News newsroom policy would state that they would take something they're not sure about and try to vet it with their own sources, but it's not a legal mandate.
Right, exactly. And by the way, that's how you tell the difference between good press and poor press. It's not really poor press, it's just poorly executed press.
Right.
Okay. So good press will always try to get another, it's not another viewpoint, It's trying to get more information from a different source. No one. The big confusion always with journalism is it has to be 50-50. Well, nothing is 50-50.
You can't be 50-50 with a mosaic.
Well, and you can't be 50-50 as a human being.
Yeah. Because there are so many facets and aspects to each and everything going on in life.
Yeah. And so what happens is, of course, that you then have people who like Julian Assange, although this is the first one. Hey, everybody, this is like watching a jet fly for the first time. Mm-hmm. This is the first person to actually use the internet for this kind of what I would refer to as a peaceful protest. This is nothing more than calling the attention, just like it was when we'd march on Washington in the 60s, when there were million people marches every other weekend.
But there's a certain lack of seriousness, I sense, about it. What he does and what Michael Moore does in his documentaries, although they have a very serious purpose, he peppers them with some very sarcastic and sardonic humor. It's more in the term, I likened it to a political practical joke being played by the yippies to make a point. For effect. You remember the Yippies and Jerry Rubin back in the 60s? They were sort of like the court jesters of the movement.
Right.
You know, they were serious and they were making points, but they were making them almost as slash stand-up comedian slash satirist would make a point. They were pranksters. They were pranksters with a purpose.
Right.
And Assange strikes me in that mold, and Michael Moore to a certain extent.
Right. Well, Michael Moore, I think, has a little bit more baggage to him because he certainly has made committed judgments about what he's going to present to the public. Okay, so it has his viewpoint built into it.
Mm-hmm.
What I think Julian Assange has done is he said, hey, here's all this information about how your government acts. What do you think about it?
How do you make money at doing something like this? And is Assange going to get competitors now with other websites?
Well, both questions are excellent questions. I don't have any idea. He must be living off of donations. Somehow he's being supported by outside supporters or whatever. I don't think that anything having to do with money has any kind of input into this equation with what he's doing.
Because if it did, you know, that would spark investigations into where he's getting his money and who he's getting it from and what is their agenda in all of this.
Right.
And maybe somebody wants to cop his glory. Maybe somebody wants to out WikiLeaks
out
there.
That was the next thing that you asked was, what about copycats? What about other people responding? I think that's the real big danger that did come out of all of this is, how do we know which information is truthful in any way, shape, or form? So there could, like I mentioned earlier, there could be people who would set up misinformation data.
There are mainstream media people out there who are taking excerpts from The Onion, which is clearly a satirical thing, and running it as though somebody had actually said it and reported it.
Absolutely. And what's the famous phrase now going on in journalism? I'm not saying this. I'm just saying. You know? They'll immediately say, oh, I deny this, but at the same time, I'm going to now tell you about it.
Right.
But it has nothing to do with whether or not they have investigated anything. It has nothing to do with whether or not they've had pressure from higher ups to talk about a story from a different slant. And I'm not saying that I'm not going to point fingers, but you can certainly see that Fox News is different than MSNBC, is different than CNN, is different than NBC. And then you have to go to the equal point, which to me is The Daily Show.
Right.
And here you were talking about stand-up comedians before.
Mm-hmm.
They have more impact with their pointing out the truthiness, as Colbert likes to say, of the situation than the regular press is doing. The regular press has laid down for the last several years.
Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert have become the professional grandchildren of Lenny Bruce and George Carlin.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think we may be better for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that cable television allows. That's one of the things that if people were finding that the information was wrong, that it was false, that Daily Show is talking about things that really don't count, they wouldn't be watching it. Right now, it's the largest cable TV show on, has the largest amount of viewers.
And the reason they're on cable instead of the network is because you can say boop on cable and you can't say it on NBC, CBS, or ABC or
nowadays,
Fox.
Nowadays, you tend to say that more often.
There's a lot more to say it about
these days. There you go.
Chris Harris, professor of electronic media communication here at MTSU, thank you for helping us dissect WikiLeaks, and may all your Ukrainian nurses be voluptuous.
Thank you so much, Jen.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes.